evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, June 17, 2024. Traders from South Sudan accuse Ugandan authorities of blocking fish businesses.
It is not correct for Uganda to block our goods from going to Congo. We call on the Ugandan authorities to allow the two markets in Uganda and Congo to operate freely.
And Sudanese refugees say life is tough in camps in Uganda.
It has affected the education system here in the settlement. You find child labor has been now the order of the day. Parents go with their children to the garden. Very far.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Ugandan authorities have imposed a ban on fish imports from South Sudan. Ugandan ambassador to South Sudan says his government is working to resolve a dispute between South Sudan fish traders and revenue authorities in Kampala. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Hundreds of South Sudanese fish traders say they are being blocked from exporting fish to the Democratic Republic of Congo. Tongbura Chek, former chairperson of the Jonglei State Fisheries Traders Union, says Ugandan authorities have detained about 18 trucks loaded with fish destined to markets in the DRC.
It is not correct for Uganda to block our goods from going to Congo. We call on the Ugandan authorities to allow the two markets in Uganda and Congo to operate freely. We have buyers in Congo and not in Uganda.
Achek says hundreds of South Sudanese who are involved in the fish business have been stranded for more than a month in Uganda. John Ding is one of the fish traders who is stuck in Uganda. He says Uganda's decision has severely impacted his business.
Our business has been affected because we don't have any customers who come to the market. You will be losing because there are nowhere you get the customer who can buy your thing. So now the thing will be down. The rain is coming every now in my room, in my store. In the, at night, the rain was raining. And the rain was into my room, my store.
Ronnie Balia, Uganda's ambassador to South Sudan, says his government intervened days ago and trucks loaded with salted fish have been allowed to cross into Congo.
What I know, that matter was solved. It was solved long ago. The trucks went. They went to Congo. Foreign Affairs is handling that matter with the Minister of Trade. But the other fish trucks were released. They were released about 5 days ago. We intervened and they were released.
Onyoti Adigo, South Sudan's Minister of Livestock and Fisheries, says his office is aware of the dispute between Uganda authorities and South Sudanese fish traders. Adigo says he is working with the relevant authorities to resolve the matter.
They said that they had been arrested. There were some certain places where they told me where they were stopped and they were supposed to put down their fish produce down so that they are sold in Uganda. I wrote official letter to the Minister of Foreign Affairs suggesting the summon of His Excellency, the Ambassador of Uganda. I also indicated in my letter that we need to include the Minister of East African Affairs.
Some fish traders in South Sudan say that Uganda's attempt to bolster its economy has raised questions about the impact on cross-border trade and the livelihoods of the South Sudanese traders. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
Still in Juba, some Sudanese refugees in the capital say the relative peace in South Sudan has given them an opportunity to pursue studies in different fields, including journalism. Others have enrolled at the University of Juba to study English. Dennis Longonyi has more from Juba.
After escaping Sudan's conflict, Samson Yunan, who now lives in Cor William suburb in Juba, says he is pursuing a degree in media studies.
I passed through a lot of challenges, and that's why I choose to be a journalist, because a journalist are the eye of people, eye of community, eye of the world, and without journalists, I think we cannot access the information about other people who are suffering around the world.
Samson says his journey from southern Kordofan to South Sudan was tough. He says South Sudan is his second country of asylum.
I was refugee since 1999 in Kenya, when the war broke out first between Sudan and the SPLA, which is now is as a country in South Sudan. I flew to Kenya. I went there as a refugee. I studied there in a refugee camp in Kakuma. Then after I finished my secondary school, I came immediately to South Sudan. I registered again as a refugee in Juba. Then I planned to go back to Sudan. I went to Sudan. When I reached Sudan in 2013, the war again broke out there. I decided to come back. When I decided to come back again, I planned to come to Juba for my further study. The war again broke out in South Sudan. Then I decided to go to one of the camps and place called Ajongtok.
He says he has a small business in Juba that keeps him busy.
South Sudan government is treating us refugees as a citizen of the country. They allow us to move free. We can enroll in school like other citizens. If you have your own money, you can pay like a citizen the way they are paying. Though there is no fully security in South Sudan, but still we move and we can move from state to state. Nobody can disturb us. If you have that idea of refugees, I think it will support us a lot.
Salim Daoud is from Sudan's Blue Nile state. He says he fled fighting in Sudan 10 years ago and has graduated with a bachelor's degree in development studies from St. Mary's University. Daoud broke down during an interview as he remembers life back in Sudan. He says war memories are still vivid in his mind.
On that day when I heard the sound of the gun, the next morning there was Antonov come and bombed our areas, and even some people lost their life there. So we were scared and we just ran away from our homeland. We left our resources, the kettles, the goats we had, the kitchen, our rooms, so everything. We ran for our life, and some of our people, we know them, they died during that day. Our brothers were soldiers. We lost some of them. So Sudan has never been again a good place for us.
He says his life started to change when he was airlifted from Doro refugee camp to Juba by the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, to attend university. After graduating in 2023, he now teaches at a school in Juba.
My mom especially keep requesting from me, and that is her right, because as a child, I should assist her. And sometimes when I get small money, you know, I used to buy soap, send back to my band. Mama, sometimes I buy clothes to them, and then also sandals. These are the few things I'm doing, but I still even want to do more than that, but only that. I'm not getting a job now this year. But otherwise, I still hope if I could work one day, I have to stand with them. I have two sisters. One now finished primary 8, and she's now in senior 1. I send them textbooks last time. And the younger one in primary 7, I send her textbooks. I encourage her that you have to go to school so that you become a learned person.
UNHCR says South Sudan hosts 330,000 refugees and asylum seekers, mainly from Sudan. Each year, on 20th June, the world celebrates the courage of people who have been forced to flee their home country to escape conflict or persecution. In Sudan, more than 10 million people have been forced to flee to other parts of Sudan or neighboring countries. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
Still on refugee issues, June 20th is World Refugee Day. To help us mark the day, journalist Catherine Nambi went to Bidibidi refugee camp in Uganda, near the border with South Sudan. She spoke to people about the struggle families face in getting education for their children. Here are some of their comments.
I'm called Thomas Maliamungu. I stayed in Bidibidi settlement, Zone 1, Village 11. You know, when we are brought here to 16, we used to get 12 kilograms. That is the per person, family size. What? Now reaching to a certain level, they reduce to 7 kilograms. From 7 kilograms, people are put in categories. Category 1, category 2, category 3. If you're in category 1, you get a 6 kilograms. Those are people who are vulnerable. And then category 2, people who are somehow, who are vulnerable but not all that vulnerable, you receive 3 kilograms for the whole man. Now when you're in category 3, totally you don't get food. So refugees are divided into 3 categories when it comes to food. And it has been a very big challenge to us as a refugee. Of course, you cannot eat 3 kilograms for the whole man. You cannot eat 7 kilograms for the whole man. So this has brought theft cases.
It has affected the education system. here in a settlement, you find child labor has been now the order of the day. Parents go with their children to the garden very far, because now you cannot send a child to school when the child is empty stomach. So it has affected education, and the attendance of learners in the class has reduced seriously, and even the enrollment, and it has caused dropout.
I'm Stella Yunimba, a refugee from South Sudanese. I come from Arewa 1 cluster, Bidibidi settlement, Zone 5. Now, we are no longer in the emergency state. We are now in the development state. Now, partners are going away where there are wars. You know, wars are not only in South Sudan, but there are other areas where there are wars. And now they are now facing where there are new wars, where people are need to be supported. And now these ones who are now in the development stage, people are moving away. Those supports that used to come are now reducing. And you find that there's really hardship in getting the basic needs, and you find that parents are not able to support their children in school. That's why you find that there's a high rate of school dropout, and most especially for the girls, there's a high rate of school dropouts and teenage breakdowns, just because parents are not able to give the necessary things girls need for their education. That's why when they get some boyfriends who can give them something to support themselves, the end thing is they sleep with them. The end result is getting pregnant, you go and marry that person. So there are a lot of things that we, the refugees, are going through.
Yeah, my name is Angoyo Henry Thomas. I'm in Arewa 1 cluster within Bidibidi refugee settlement. We have our girl child. Because the parents lack support to support their girls, these girls intended to move to people who have some money to give them to cater for their basic needs. At the end, it results to pregnancies. After when a girl gets pregnant, which means this child can drop out from school. This is a great challenge, and it is really so affecting our education system in Bidibidi refugee settlement.
I'm Atim Zainabu, the head teacher, Arewa Secondary School. These learners walk long distance, come to school, and then they stay the whole day without food. We have initiated with parents the school feeding program from 2020, and the program kicked off very well. That was a time when UNHCR was supporting fully refugees in giving them food. But when their food ratio reduced, our school feeding program greatly got affected, because 99% the school feeding program was depending on the food ratio they are receiving from the community. UNHCR used to support learners in very many ways, but looking at the funding, which has drastically reduced, these supports are not there, and even it has affected our enrollment this year. The enrollment has dropped, as some of them has gone back to their country because they claim they are here because of education, but now the education is becoming expensive for them, and they wish the others have moved back.
Those were voices of South Sudanese refugees, rather, in Uganda's Bidibidi camp. They were speaking with journalist Catherine Nambi. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The war in Ukraine has produced millions of refugees. Find out why after the break.
Listener of South Sudan in Focus, we have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Nearly 6.5 million, that is the number of Ukraine refugees the United Nations counts in the third year of Russia's full-scale invasion. According to the agency's latest report, most of them hope to return home one day. Let's talk to Ukrainians who have already done so.
A backpack and a package of diapers, that is what Daria Frich-Alchina took with her when she left her native city of Mykolaiv, Ukraine, at the beginning of the war in March 2022. Her daughter Sasha was 6 months old back then.
I wanted to stay home, but then a rocket exploded in the house next to ours. Our windows blew out and it was really scary, so we decided to flee.
With her daughter and mother, Frich-Alchina ended up in Italy. Monasteries in Sicily gave them shelter for more than a year.
I hoped it would only last 2 weeks, but my district was very close to then-occupied Kherson, and it was scary in the city. But after Kherson was liberated in the fall of 2022, I bought tickets home.
Frich-Alchina admits the decision to return was tough because Mykolaiv is still considered a frontline city, but she had a strong motive.
My husband is an officer. He was called up immediately in the early morning when the war started, and I was worried that our daughter wouldn't know her father. We fled when she was very little, and she grew up without him for the whole year.
Little Sasha now goes to a kindergarten with a shelter. The family is used to a constant sirens. Frich-Alchina works at a non-profit that promotes the Ukrainian thaws and organizes cultural festivals.
When we came back to Mykolaiv, I somehow breathed in life again. I knew I was needed here.
When the invasion began, fleeing abroad wasn't an option for Tatiana Miroshnichenko. Her town, Ivankiv, in the Kyiv region, was occupied almost immediately.
It was a tough 36 days, mentally as well. Planes flew over our roof almost every night to bomb Kyiv. So after the end of Russian occupation, I decided we have to go abroad.
She took her daughter Ivanka and came to Bulgaria, where they stayed for 6 months.
I worked remotely for a Ukrainian company, but my salary wasn't enough for a comfortable life there. Plus, I was alone with a small child, and the local kindergarten was full.
In addition, little Ivanka constantly said she missed home.
So did I. Moreover, it had become relatively quiet in our region, so we came back last autumn.
Ivanka is preparing to go to school this autumn, and she just had her first big dance performance. Her mom says they are both happy to be at home, despite the war.
Literally a couple of weeks after our arrival, there was a big rocket attack, but I still did not regret my decision to return because it's easier to breathe at home.
Both mothers interviewed say they will leave their homes again only if the threat of Russian occupation returns. Lesia Bakalets, VOA News, Kyiv.
We will continue to bring stories about refugees in camps across Uganda in our broadcast this week as we celebrate the World Refugee Day. Nigeria is grappling with the worst cost of living crisis in decades, with 31 million Nigerians projected by the UN to face acute hunger this year. Lagos Food Bank has begun partnering with farmers to collect surplus produce. The aim is to make sure it ends on families' table instead of going to waste. Timothy Obiezu reports from Lagos.
It's harvest day for local farmer Johnny Darlington, and volunteers from the Lagos Food Bank Initiative are here to purchase produce he might not be able to sell. It's all part of a program started by the food bank last year to curb farmers' losses and direct otherwise wasted food to hungry people. Darlington explains.
The road is bad. And before we get our goods out, some go bad. The distance to the market as well. For instance, where I am now, Hawo, down to Lagos, passing through Ifo Road, is very, very terrible. So imagine having to wait or break down.
Experts estimate that 40% of all food produced in Nigeria is lost, wasted, or spoiled. Poor road infrastructure, the high cost of transportation, and improper storage facilities for rural farmers are to blame. That's where the Lagos Food Bank comes in. From the farm, the produce is taken to a storage facility where it's cleaned, sorted, and prepared for distribution. This week, hundreds of vulnerable people in this Lagos slum benefited from the initiative's free meals, or what they call the Box of Hope. One beneficiary is Maria Francis.
I feel happy.
She says she's very happy and she appreciates what they're doing for her community. She says she can't describe how she feels unless you get into her heart. You people don't want us to beg for food, she adds. Another recipient is Kpeju Obikoya. She says God will continue to help the group so that they will keep coming. She says she prays this will not be their last. This intervention is timely. Nigeria is struggling with its worst cost of living crisis in decades, exacerbated by unpopular government reforms, including the scrapping of the petrol subsidy. The United Nations estimates 31 million people will be food insecure between June and September this year, the so-called lean season. Michael Sunbola is the executive director of the Lagos Food Bank.
There's a lot of food gap in our society, and the fact that at least more than 63.3% of our population are multidimensionally poor, and the fact that a whole lot of people still struggle to find their meet their daily needs and also fend for themselves and, you know, and feed. And we have to, come up with very creative ways to solve some of these pressing problems.
Sunbola says the group has served more than 2 million people in 170 communities so far. Last week, President Bola Tinubu said he was aware of the challenges triggered by his reforms, but said the reforms will create a better economic future for Nigerians. Initiatives like the Lagos Food Bank aim to help millions of vulnerable people keep from going hungry until that future arrives. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Lagos, Nigeria.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday, June 17, 2024. We now leave you with the song Jomoko by Olit.
Lakini nitiero siepe moko moko beyo. Mana mohero neno nyuni mana kongo. To kata kech negi ot. Oponyal mi kata gi matini ritrigo yawa.
Ololo, maye. Ololo, maye. Ololo, maye. Ololo, maye.
Epinka, chirega jok moko. Jok moko, yawa jok moko. Ma woya woya, kin gi woya woya, manaka jok michieno. Igal ni amu eloga katogeno, katogeno, yawa katogeno. Epinka, chirega jok moko, jok moko, yawa jok moko. Jok moko, ma woya woya, kin gi woya woya, manaka jok michieno. Igal ni amu eloga katogeno, katogeno, yawa katogeno. Jomoko anya wacha chopeni liyo meti. Jomoko anya wacha chopeni liyo kutinyano. Jomoko anya wacha chopeni liyo kwezi. Kindi
robe osep ni nyalo konyi mama nota ye ni e lakini ni tere gosepe mamoko maga ole maga njao nika kongo debeto yeno nyalo ngeo ni kata mopongo gunia kata mana dunia lakini nise ni wodi mama miagi moro matina ritu tako dan marach doda komi osepe tobe osep ni nyalo konyi mama nota ye ni e lakini ni tere osepe moko maga ole maga njao nika kongo to yeno nyalo ngeo ni kata mopongo gunia kata mana dunia lakini ni senu odi mama miagi moro matina ritu tako dan marach doda komi jomobo wanda wanda kwebende kiyonge.
We have been listening to Olive and the song Jomoko. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Helen, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to tune in tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Osiepe moko bende jo wondore nono ngare nono to bende ongogo maduma piny ni to bende do makapo de sungri gato karido.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The 14-month civil war in Sudan between the Sudanese armed forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces has so far cost around 15,000 people their lives and displaced some 10 million others, according to the United Nations. Today, the Sudanese people are caught in the midst of the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The United States is deeply concerned by the rapidly deteriorating situation in Sudan, said U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
This conflict has been a nightmare for the Sudanese people who have faced unthinkable violence and are living under the world's worst humanitarian crisis. And we cannot sit idly by as these horrors play out before our eyes.
Currently, the fighting is centered on the city of El Fasher, which has been under siege by the rapid support forces since April. El Fasher is the last major urban center in Darfur that remains in the hands of the Sudanese armed forces and is the home or refuge of around 1.5 million people. Indeed, thousands of Sudanese fleeing from fighting elsewhere have ended up in El Fasher. But now this city, once a relatively safe harbor, has become yet another front line. We see upwards of a million innocent people being starved by the siege of the RSF, said Tom Perriello, U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan. And as bad as it is, it could get worse any day if El Fasher falls. Not only the horrors that would come from the battle, but as people flee. On June 13th, the UN Security Council passed a resolution demanding that the rapid support forces halt their siege of El Fasher. Under the resolution, all parties to the conflict must ensure civilians be protected, those wishing to move to safer areas must be allowed to do so, and the warring parties must allow safe and sustained passage of humanitarian relief to the city. We must all call on the RSF and the SAF to meet their obligations under international law and protect civilians from violence, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
We urge the Council to apply targeted sanctions measures to help address the ongoing violence and to send a strong signal to perpetrators of abuses.
The United States, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield, remains fully committed to working with the United Nations to end the bloodshed, protect civilians, and bring peace to Sudan.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Thank you.